You're listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web. Worldwide revolution and evolution. And from our house to your house, you know, not all Americans use tank to come into your house, tanks. Some of us just download a little money, and you invite us, and we're always, always pleased to be in your house. And from our house to your house, and if this is the first time you've listened to the program, then you don't know that when you listen to this show, you turn the lights down low. Here she is.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Block, your love doctor, your mother confessor, your ever so slightly twisted little sister, your daughter of the American Revelation, your horny housewife, your pleasure preacher, brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners, your wielder of weapons of mass discussion. That's what we throw around here on the Dr. Susan Block Show on Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web, Worldwide Revolution, Worldwide Sexual Revelation. I am a sex therapist, that's my day job, but we talk about all kinds of subjects here: sex, love, life, death. And we're broadcasting live from Los Angeles tonight in our beautiful studios at Dr. Susie's Speakeasy in the soul of downtown L.A. And my guest live tonight is the world famous, at least in Holland, but also in Los Angeles and Cairo and everywhere around the world and perhaps on the moon, Willem de Ridder. Welcome, Willem.
Hi, Susie.
How you doing?
Susie Bella.
Susie Bella, that's me.
Yeah, that's you.
My daddy used to call me Susabelle.
Susabelle, yeah, that's a nice name.
Mm-hmm. So, Willem is an old friend of ours from, actually, as David said, you've known him longer than your parents. Not quite, but...
pretty close.
But you go back. And Sister Terry is also here with us tonight.
Hello, hello.
How you doing there?
Quite good, thank you.
Quite well. Well done. So I hear. Anyway.
Quite
so,
well.
Willem. What are you doing here in Los Angeles? Tell us about your exhibit and your talk that you're going to be giving very soon.
Yeah, I don't think I have an exhibit, but I'm invited here to give a talk. Originally, I would give a speech also for the UCLA. That's going to be postponed because all the dates are gone, and I couldn't come earlier. But I'm going to tell a story in a gallery in Chinatown.
Okay, so you are the exhibit.
I'm the exhibit, yeah. Absolutely. Yes. And it seems that a lot of people are interested, and I've lived here in Hollywood for quite a while. So I've done many weird things here.
Yeah. And does this have anything to do with your history of the Fluxus movement, or is this related to some art thing we can talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I've done so many things, of course, you know, like in Amsterdam, I started a newspaper that for the first time everybody could actually write in it. What's now normal on the internet was then a total revolution. You know what I mean?
Reader-written.
Totally reader-written.
Everything is now reader-written. In fact, Bonobo Way is our new community, and like MySpace and like all these Facebook, it's a reader-written revolution.
Actually, Willem and I invented the internet.
Yes. You and Al Gore.
Al Gore was our political partner.
Oh, yeah. And sex was always there.
Always.
Yeah, and we invented that, too, actually.
You invented sex as
absolutely.
Well. Wow, that goes way back.
We invented the girl
Are
next
Are you the
door.
Elohim?
I
Did
might
you come
be.
Here on a spaceship or the Big Bang? So what are you going to tell a story about, Willem, this Saturday?
Now, what I basically tell is that... that here in Hollywood, I started for the first time doing radio.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a little fed up with newspapers and with magazines. And I wanted to do things beyond reading and writing. So I started talking.
There you go.
And normally on radio, you know, there's a script. There's always writers in the back that write a script, you know.
Mm.
And that's
or
why
talking points, at least.
Yeah, or yeah, and but in many cases you hear indeed on radio and television those typically reading voices, you know. You know how it is, you know. And I started actually making for Dutch National Radio, which went all over the country there, programs which I improvised, you know. And but I realized, you know, a little bit that I was getting a little uptight, you know, because everybody listens to you, and we're terrified of what people think of you. We want to be successful and we want to be good, you know what I mean? So you get uptight, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And fuck what people think.
Huh?
Fuck what people think.
Of course. But
yeah.
And you, but you
back
can
to fucking.
You,
always.
Yes, but you can fuck them, you know, but you still have that ID, you know what I mean? And I thought that too. And I, what the fuck, you know, and my father is hearing this, my mother is, what will they think about me, you know, can I, you know, I got so fed up with that. And one day, I remember, it was a historic moment.
Yeah.
I sat down behind my microphone and I said, listen, I'm not going to talk to the listeners anymore. I talk to you. Mm-hmm. I want to be in direct contact with you.
One listener.
And listen, you are right now listening, and it doesn't matter where you are. It's not important that I'm in Hollywood right now. You are right now listening to me, and I'm right now talking to you. And I want to be as close as possible to you. So perhaps you might think it's a little scary. I feel a little scary about it too, but I don't give a shit about it anymore. You can turn off the radio. I put a little music on now. Gives you a chance to turn off the radio. But when I come back, you know, I'm going to be very close to you. And when I came back, you know, I got in this trance and I said, listen, turn off the telephone.
Mm.
I'll lay down, you know. On the bed or on the floor, on the carpet or whatever, you know, but let's make it intimate. And it got so intimate that I said, let's undress.
Oh, yeah.
And then we started to masturbate together.
Oh,
and we tried to get that, to get an orgasm at the same time, you know. And when I was finished, you know, I was terrified. I put that tape somewhere and I haven't touched it for weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the next program, I was fucked up, and the next program, and I thought, you know, one day I remember I put that tape in an envelope and I put it in the letterbox. And I've tried for an hour to get it out. I couldn't, you know what I mean? I thought, oh, that's the end of my career. That's the end. Oh my God, I fucked it up. Oh shit, what did I do? You know, I never should have done this, you know. And I didn't hear for quite a while anything from Holland, and then one day I got a letter with extra money and they played it twice.
Oh.
And then I was over my fear, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized, I can do this.
You know what I mean?
And then my whole radio became a complete different thing, you know? It became very intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And people loved it, and I too. And then I realized, if you love it yourself, then the people who listen to you love it too.
Sure.
Because in feeling, we are connected totally.
Absolutely.
And then I started doing all kind of things like, listen, my dear listener, you only have a chance of listening to these shows passively, right? You can turn on the radio and turn it off. You can like it or dislike it, and that's about it. But right now, I'm going to make a program tonight that gives you the chance to listen actively. And if you dare to listen actively, you're going to have an adventure you'll never forget in your life.
Wow, and that's when you would tell them what to do.
Go to your car. turn on the radio.
That's the problem with doing this on the computer. You can't tell people to go to their cars.
And listen and follow my instructions.
So, not yet.
Thousands of people
went into their cars.
Yes.
And you had people gathering in cars in different, like, traffic jams and all.
I made the program so that, because the country is very small, which makes it very nice, on a certain moment, there were in the middle of the night traffic jams from horizon to horizon.
Wow. Amazing.
People actually are still talking about it. You know, it became...
Did anybody ever make a movie of one of those traffic jams that people listening to the radio show?
This year, there's going to be a cinema movie about it called The Halloween Night Ride.
Wow. When did you start
in
radio?
And I play a role in it.
The Halloween Night Ride.
He started in radio in Hollywood as a sort of a...
Yeah, in Hollywood?
Yes. That's the first radio I made. For
in
Holland.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
With a little tape recorder that your father made, actually, right?
No. It was the first professional company, Uher, made normally tape machines for radio stations. And I heard they made the very first cassette recorder. And I couldn't get them because they were not for sale, but I had good contact with the Rolling Stones. So I phoned Keith Richards, and I said, listen, I heard you
he got that. He phoned Keith Richards, okay? Just
yeah,
wanted to make
yeah
sure
because I had visited him in Nice before that, you know, because they wanted me to design a cover for one of their LPs. And because I had this newspaper, and I was very well known, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I heard they ordered a bunch of them. And I said, is that true? Did you order? He said, yes, we ordered 12. And I said, can you order for me one too? Okay. And they ordered one for me. And just before I went to America, I got it in the mail. Thanks to the Rolling Stones.
Excellent.
And then I didn't know what to do with it because I didn't. I mean, I had, you know, I was sitting in Hollywood. And then one day, it was very nice, I got a tape from a friend of mine who worked at the radio station. And it was a personal letter to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. This is in the 1960s.
In the 70s, beginning of the
70s,
uh-huh. Yeah. And he said, he was a little depressed, you know. He said, you know, the world is going to an end, you know, and friends are committing suicide, and what do we do, you know, like this. So I thought, okay, I make a personal letter back to him in the form of a radio show.
A radio letter.
Yeah, a radio letter. So, and I worked with it, you know, and I used music from Hollywood stations in the background. So I started really playing with that little machine, and I really liked it, you know. And I made a wonderful spoken letter to him, just for him, you know. And I sent it to him, and to my great amazement, he played it on the radio.
Oh,
and he asked if I wanted to do more, and that's how it started. It started totally, I didn't ask him, no, it fell in my lap, you know what I mean?
Beautiful.
Yeah, really beautiful.
Yeah.
But then the problem came, the first tape that I made was for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second tape that I made was for the whole country.
Nope.
And I got uptight. Oh, my God.
Oh,
you know?
Again.
You remember?
Keep going that's in and out of your uptightness.
Yeah, no, that's how it started.
You flow and then get uptight and then feel good and then get uptight.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like the pleasure-pain syndrome. I mean,
if
you don't have a little bit of pain, how are you going to really feel pleasure?
Exactly.
Agreed.
If you're totally cool with life from the beginning,
exactly,
then you're never going to appreciate happiness.
Exactly.
You appreciate happiness because you've experienced pain.
Absolutely.
So
and misery.
God and Goddess bless your neurotic self.
Yes. I completely, 5,000% agree with you.
Pain is life.
Yeah.
It is.
It's a golden opportunity.
It drove you, too. It's kind of like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, we have some people that are in waiting on Skype, but I also want to give out the phone number. If you're listening on drsusanblock.com, you can give us a call. In North America, you can call our toll-free number, which is 1-866-289-7068. Anywhere else in the world, you can call the regular number. We have some European numbers,
yeah,
but I don't remember them.
What you need to do is go to drsusanblock.com.
Right, and then you can see all the numbers.
We have numbers in Germany, we have numbers in France.
Yeah.
We have numbers all over the world.
In America.
Of course, in America.
Where it only costs a few pesos.
Right.
Yeah. And if you're in Skype, put yourself into waiting, and we will put you into talking. So we've got quite a few people in waiting, and we'll see what they have to say.
All right, what do we got?
Stephen M. Wolf. Hello.
Hello, Stephen.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Excellent.
Hi, Stephen.
What's going on with you?
Well, I have a couple questions. Have you done any research, or do you know of anybody doing research for individuals with major physical disabilities and sex?
Yes, actually. Frank Moore is one that comes to my mind right away. Are you
the
familiar
one who's
with
running
Frank
for president
Moore?
With you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a quadriplegic with severe cerebral palsy, and he's definitely a sex guru. And he's written many, many works on his own disabilities and sex, and he works with a bunch of people and their disabilities and sex. Another one that comes to mind is Tuppy Owens,
right?
Tuppy Owens in England. You know, right. Tuppy. Is she still doing her thing, I think? She works with people
Owens.
With disabilities
she
and sex.
She does the fetish balls, and she works.
She does the fetish balls. Right. There's always a lot of disability people.
Mm-hmm.
Look up those two names on the internet, okay, darling?
Yes.
You got them? Tuppy Owens.
Yeah, and remember.
And Frank Moore.
Frank
Moore. He's running for president, and I'm his vice president.
Right. And Frank Moore. Was told by the doctors, his parents were told.
That he was retarded.
He was retarded, put him away.
Put him away.
You know, and now he has more women than Hugh Hefner.
Oh, he's got so many women, and he can't talk. I mean, the guy is brilliant.
He can talk.
He's a genius.
He can talk.
He can't speak through his mouth.
He said,
right. There you go. That was beautiful.
And he talks loud and clear.
Awful. Yeah. Oh, he does. It's awful. But it's great. And he's a brilliant writer, of course, and his main squeeze, I don't know if she's his wife, his girlfriend, but she can understand what he's saying by the way that he moves his tongue.
Wow.
How about that?
Yes.
It's pretty hot, huh? Okay,
I'm
so
familiar with that technology.
Do you want to tell us what your situation is, or?
Well, I have a rare condition, which is not quite as bad as being quadriplegic, but I'm like in the middle of the road. I mean, I can do some things for myself, and there's other things that I can't do, and I'm small,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
my experience has been that since I get around in a wheelchair, women that I particularly like, they all more or less say, well, if you want to disable them, go out with
you.
Good
idea.
And a friend of mine says that the reason they probably say that is because when women see you in that wheelchair, they are looking at the wheelchair more than you, and
yeah.
they see, and that's a hard thing. And I
that's a hard
that.
Thing to get. That's true. You're right.
So what you got to do is go to Home Depot, right?
Get yourself a fancy wheelchair.
No. Get yourself a can of paint and throw it on the wall. And tell them, I'm an artist. Yes.
Well.
And then all the women would love you. Honest.
Well, I guess what Brother Dave is saying is that you've got to kind of get them to think beyond the wheelchair. Because,
right.
Yes, of course, we all tend to do that. We stereotype people by what we see, by the instant impression that is made on us, which is often based on stereotypes. So the whole idea of seduction, weapons of mass seduction, or even just seducing one person,
yeah.
is to get past that, to
mm-hmm.
somehow make an impression that gets past the stereotype.
Do you have a computer? Do you have a computer?
Yes.
Okay.
Now I'm talking to you through Skype.
Great.
Right now.
Here's what I want you to
awesome.
Do. I want you to go to Bonobo Way.
Bonobo
and
Way.
Join
yeah.
us.
And
join the community.
And talk about these things, what it means to be in a wheelchair.
And
okay.
who knows, you might get laid.
Okay,
you probably will.
You really might. I kind of love you.
BonoBoway.com.
Bonobo. Like the chimps.
Is it possible? I'm not going to be able to type this, but can you send me a text message when somebody...
Can you do that?
Can you do that, Terry? Can you send Stephen M. Wolf here?
Yeah.
He's in there
okay.
somewhere. Just send him
we'll send
link.
You a text message, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, darling.
You
take care, and we'll be
care.
In touch.
Steven. I don't see him on the list. He needs to add us. Add Susan to your contact list, and then I can do that for you as the Skype manager.
You already are.
Okay, we're...
Steve. What's your Skype name, Ben?
M. Wolf. Steven, S-T-E-P-H-E-N.
I see a couple Stevens, but I don't see Steven M. Wolf.
Okay, you can do it from your computer, I think.
Excuse me. Yeah. My screen name is SteveWiz750.
SteveWiz.
Are you sure that you've added Susan onto your contact list? Because if you don't, I don't see her on the contact list.
Okay, just go to our website.
I'm hidden. That's what it is. I'm hidden.
Ah, well, you know, you're hiding then. Okay, well, when you come out from hiding, we'll help you out.
Yeah.
Just
go
really quick. Come out from hiding really fast right now.
Okay. I'm going to put you down in the listening, though, darling, because I got to talk to some other people.
There you are.
Okay, we got you. We're going to hook you up with Bonobo Way.
Where are you calling from?
I'm Baltimore, Maryland.
All right. Thanks.
I got
you take care. And learn how to speak the language.
Yeah. Okay. Steven M. Wolf.
We're doing it. Okay.
I've got your links for you.
Let's see. I've got a bunch of different people that I don't know.
Down.
Who is Tom Petty?
There's a Tom Petty guy.
Sorry.
Victorian
JK. I'm a little drunk. I'm sorry.
Hello, Victorian JK.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, yeah, just question.
Go ahead.
Sure.
So, how can you actually deal with a person who has a bipolar disorder?
Bipolar is one of the best disorders there is.
There you go.
Sorry, I
Send
love bipolar.
Terry. She loves bipolar guys.
I do.
Are you talking about bipolar girl or bipolar guy?
Well, essentially, family member.
Family members.
Family.
Okay, and so
bipolar's tough.
Who are you in relation to them?
Well, it's actually my cousin.
Your cousin.
Mhm.
And he's bipolar. He's been diagnosed as bipolar.
Yeah.
They want to diagnose everybody as bipolar these days.
They are doing a lot of that.
Oh, we don't know what's wrong with you. You're bipolar. Here's some drugs.
If people get very happy and very sad, basically they become bipolar.
You know, I'm really happy and really sad, and they've tried to give me the bipolar label a few times, but it's really misdiagnosed so often.
So what do you think? Do you think your cousin really is on the crazy side? Or just
That's what I tell her, and she keeps on, you know, showing off some strange things that she's not supposed to do.
What do you mean?
Oh, your cousin is showing off strange things that she's not supposed to do. Tell us more.
What is she doing?
Well, anything that doesn't make sense.
What kind of actions is she taking? That are tied into, I'm guessing, bipolar disorder that are upsetting you.
Well, I would say there are times that she would give wrong reactions to certain situations.
What do you mean by wrong?
Slow down. One at a time.
Wrong is relative.
One at a time.
Sorry.
So what? Yeah. Give us a situation.
You've now been asked the question three times, maybe six.
By the engineer.
Okay. Everyone is wondering. You keep saying she's wrong, she's bad, and you're starting to sound like a very judgmental young man. We want to know what it is that is so wrong and bad, so we can either agree with you and tell you how to get her to get help, or we can say, hey, maybe you're being a little tough on her. I don't know. So what does she do?
Well, let me see. So sometimes, whenever we're having a talk and conversation seems pretty normal, but towards the end of it, she gets a little, how do I say this? Well,
sexy.
No, wait, let's hear it. I keep waiting. What does she get?
What does she get? He's afraid to tell. Tell. It's okay. Nobody's listening.
Yeah. You know, it seems like she kind of gives strange remarks like that there's some kind of intention.
That's
some
very
kind of
vague.
Intention.
I'm trying to understand.
Are you talking about a sexual thing?
tell it in words.
Yeah, exactly.
A sexual thing.
Right.
Okay. So you think that she's too sexual? Is it a she? Yeah, she's too sexual?
She is not for me.
Okay, so what you think is that you're turned on by your cousin.
Right.
I am not. She seems to be.
She's hot, isn't she?
She sounds hot.
Not really, but...
Well, you're not supposed to think so, but, like, let's say you're some outsider looking in, and you check out, you know, the chick that is your cousin, you know, you'd think, hey, that's a good-looking chick.
But you're still being quite kind
vague.
Of general and, yeah, vague. I mean, when you say she's being sexy, I mean, does that mean she tears all her clothes off, or does she lick her lips, or does she give you a look?
Yeah,
or,
yeah. So, like, it shows up with the gestures.
Is she going for you or for other people?
For me and towards others.
For you.
And towards others.
And how old
so
is she?
She's being inappropriate. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
That's
okay.
Not manic depressive, darling.
No, that's
a whole other thing.
A whole different category.
So this that's not manic depressive.
I was just trying to connect because it might be related because I'm not sure.
Listen, today everybody has bipolar. Something.
Everybody. Doctors want to diagnose bipolar left and right without regard for how accurate it is.
Is this cousin of yours, how old is she?
21.
And is she a student or is she working?
Well, she's working right now.
Okay. Is she a happy person in general or very unhappy?
It's either happy or not.
Well, that's the way
either
it is.
Either happy or not happy. That's what makes you think she's bipolar.
Sounds just like me.
Has she
you know,
been,
that's
has
normal she, for 21 especially. For 21,
as
I mean,
a 21-year-old,
you get older,
totally
you kind of mellow
there.
Out. You
whoa,
do,
whoa,
but when you're 21, normal is bipolar.
And it's true. I am 21 years old for the next 2 weeks,
and totally
it is
bipolar.
True.
And you, my dear Jameer, you sound very shy, almost hyper shy. It has taken, like, four of us, you know, jumping up and down on you to just get this little piece of information out of you. So I think you're a little scared of your cousin and her just her sheer force of life.
I would be too. I would be
plus,
nervous.
If she's actually bipolar, bipolar chicks are a handful. They're sexy, they're crazy, they're tough to handle.
Maybe you need help with handling her. What would you advise him to do, Willem?
I'm sorry?
Oh, I have another expert.
We have
here.
An expert here.
He's an expert.
Okay.
In disorders, in mental right. disorders. What do you think?
So, you actually have difficulties accepting her, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 You've gotta be really supportive. Borderline women.
He wants to put her on
crazy.
Medication. I can tell.
Willem is now talking and giving advice.
So if you don't accept her. Or if you think something is wrong, then you actually start to see more and more things wrong. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah,
so
yeah,
if you just for a change, try to change your mind and just tell yourself mm-hmm. that she's great and wonderful. Don't tell her, just yourself. You know, just mm-hmm. change your mind for a little bit and see what happens, you know?
I have a question. Would you consider yourself a sexually open person?
I have a question.
Yeah.
What's
yes,
your
okay.
I have a question. Yes. What's her telephone number?
That's not a good question. We're trying to get to the bottom of something here, David. What are you doing?
So you do consider yourself to be sexually open, and yet her behavior makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah, for some reason.
For some reason. So you're kind of acknowledging
is it her
that
behavior
it's
towards
not like she's that outrageous.
Is it her behavior... Sorry. Is it her behavior towards you or her behavior towards other males that upsets you?
Well, more towards me.
Towards you, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So has she like made a pass at you? Has she made it clear, like, I kind of want you? Has she hinted at it? You know, give us a little more info here.
Just hints.
And you don't even know if those hints are correct. Those hints are probably more what's in your mind than
careful.
Her mind.
I don't know. I made out with my ex-cousin once. I don't know.
And a lot of times,
can be,
you know, Jameer here is 20
time,
years
please.
Old. Jameer, you could be just sexualizing her movements that are innocent.
Could be.
Right.
So, you know.
Has she specifically hit on you? And if so, How?
Well, I can't really say that she did.
Yeah, he can't pinpoint Terry. He's already expressed that
this is a fantasy in his mind.
He's got some issues.
This is about a woman who's licking her lips and rolling her eyes every once in a while, and
she's
thinks
bipolar.
I'm just trying to keep up.
Yeah,
great lust
she's
goddess.
Bipolar, and she's on drugs.
I love bipolar girls.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
All right, Jamir. So our general advice, I think the consensus here is that you should just cool out, chill, baby.
Don't judge.
You know, and
relax.
I mean, if she's really hurting, I think you're sensitive enough that you'll pick that up. It doesn't sound like she's hurting, and she isn't even hurting you.
Willem, go ahead. Close it.
Yeah, and just try to change your idea about her, you know?
Be open. Try to help her.
This
be there
Willem's
for her.
This is Willem's
time. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
is that clear to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does it make sense?
Yeah, just try for yourself, you know, when you're in bed or alone, just make her a beautiful, wonderful, open woman, send her lots of love, you know, and see yourself in a very nice, harmonic relationship with her, just for the fun of it, you know, just change your mind.
Nice meditation.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. And then see what happens, you know? Don't expect anything from it, but just change your mind. So it gives you more rest, and who knows what happens, you know? And if something happens, let us know.
Yeah, please.
Oh, we always like the follow-up.
Will do.
Okay, oh, yes, so let us know things are going with your cousin.
Thanks so
don't
much.
Don't get too close. Don't be kissing cousins now. We're not recommending that.
Hey. Okay. I kissed ex-cousin once.
Thank you, Jamir.
How do you feel about ex-cousins? How are ex-cousins?
By the way, Richard M. Wolf has written us a thank you. He's
really great.
You're welcome, Richard Wolf.
Thank
we love you.
The cousin area is very kind of, you know, gray.
I made out with my ex-cousin once.
Ex-cousin? How do you have an ex-cousin? Is it a divorce?
Through marriage and then divorce. So there was no blood there. I don't know. I was young and I was crazy and it was pretty hot. But, he was an ex-cousin.
Mm. Okay. All right.
Who else
so
do we have?
We're just here on...
All right. So let's go back to the history.
Let's go back to
Los
the history
Angeles.
Of radio.
Our special guest
with
is Willem DeRitter. You're listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web. Military technology that was handed to me like an Easter egg.
Crack it open.
Crack it open and look inside.
And there's a funny yolk.
Yolk. Willem, welcome back to Los Angeles.
Yes.
I met Willem, I stole all his pages from Suck Magazine.
Right.
Right. And one day they called me and they said, there's a guy in the office here. His name is Willem DeRitter.
Right. You were into stealing a lot of
and
different
I said,
things.
Where is he? He's right here in the front office.
Did you run out the back then? No.
Yeah,
you came into the front, and how was your first
We're on a higher road. We are here to disseminate information. We are the underground press, and we love Suck.
love Suck.
And the stealing became a tribute.
It became a tribute.
It's just like the advice that he gave to Jamir here. You have to look at it a different way.
A different way.
Look at it as a compliment.
One of the most beautiful magazines I had seen, and I had never made magazines. I was in the collection agency.
And
business.
There were some famous people in that magazine, like Jermaine
Lots.
Greer.
Oh, yeah.
Who else?
Suck, yeah. Many, many.
Many, many?
Many. What's her name? The little skinny girl? She was beautiful.
Little skinny girl.
The model. Willem, help me out.
Oh, Twiggy?
Twiggy, right?
Twiggy the model? Was Twiggy in it?
I'm so drunk.
No, she was called the Shrimp. Jean Shrimp.
Oh, yeah, Jean Shrimp.
Right. Yes. Wow, yeah, she was hot.
But anyway, when I came into the office, I wasn't angry at all.
No.
I said, listen, great that you did it, but, you know, you can only do it once, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's better that we go on with it and start making a magazine which is totally rewritten.
Which I was doing, actually.
And Mickey was really excited about it. And the next moment, I was sitting there and designing the first of the next issue.
Well, no, there was something else.
Ah.
You asked, what kind of payment do I get?
Did I?
Yeah.
Let's not
revise history.
No.
He says, all I need is a little apartment. I take no cash.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And so he went and found an apartment, a penthouse.
Mm-hmm. A nice apartment.
Nice apartment. Now, we're talking 30-some-odd years ago.
Yeah.
And it was very expensive. It was like $350.
Wow.
Wow. That's pricey.
Right. And it was a beautiful, beautiful place. Just
next door, huh?
Yeah, just down the block.
Yeah, right.
That wasn't that great? Overlooking San Vicente Boulevard.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you made love.
Love,
and
finger
love. God.
God. God
all
was
those different great magazines.
Hate.
Oh, wow. Hate. I forgot about Hate.
Yeah. But anyway, when we started to make the first issue, it was a big success. A lot of letters came in, and it became actually quite... an amazing magazine, and I got very excited about it too, you know. And I don't know if I immediately got that penthouse, you know. We just started with the first issue, you know, and it went really well. And then a certain moment to go on with it, I needed to get out of the place where I was living, which was not my own place, you know. And anyway. We went on and on and on, and we were writing history, you know.
And you started some of the first phone sex lines.
Yeah, it was Queen Adrena.
That's,
right.
That was Queen Adrena.
Well, actually, Willem.
Yes.
We were sitting in the offices of the LA Star, and Queen Adrena would come and hang out.
Yeah.
And the phones would ring all night, and what we started to do was to masturbate people on the phone.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Queen Adrena said to me, "This is great."
Yeah.
And she started the first phone sex line, the first commercial phone sex line.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks later, about 8 weeks later, she had the FBI.
I know.
Yeah, they came and said, "You cannot transport these dirty words."
Oh, I thought they were having phone sex. Oh,
they were. Yeah. She was dominating people. Mm. You know.
Yeah.
And the rest is history, because after that.
What did the FBI do with her?
They shut her down, and she opened up again.
Yeah.
And then, after she opened up, there were thousands of people doing it.
Yeah.
And this was before credit cards, really.
Exactly.
You had to send money, you had to do this, you had to do that.
Yeah.
And it all started in those offices.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she was just hanging out. And she was
calls. And we publicized it in the news, in our magazines, you know, and that's why it became a big success.
Multimedia.
Yes, exactly. And I made also for the first time a magazine with sound, called the Sound Finger. And there was a cassette with it.
There was no writing.
And it was, but there were writing too. But
very little.
Many photographs, and Queen Adrena made a great, great part of that soundtrack, you know. Mm. But other people too, you know. It was really very powerful, you know. And
how would you say those days are different than these days?
Well, yeah, you know, because it was new. What happened was that, like, I started to get letters in that became freer and freer all the time, you know. I started, for example, getting a letter from a professor at the university who was shitting in his bathtub.
Whoa. Shitting. Yeah.
Yes. And
what university?
I don't remember that.
In the United States? Or
yes.
Oh.
And then
not Canada.
And not only that, but he did it for months. So that the whole bathtub was full of shit. Then he took a bath in it.
Ooh.
Yes. Complete with photographs and a long letter in great details and asking, are there other people doing this?
Mm.
Oh, we got another letter.
What did you think when you first saw it?
I didn't dare to publish. I thought, oh my God, this goes a little too far.
Yeah.
And I got, for example, another letter from a doctor who was doing surgery, you know. And his wife was a fetishist. And she loved to be operated on.
Yeah.
She asked her man to take a finger off and another finger or a thumb, you know, or a toe, you know. And in the end, she got so excited about it and so addicted that she wants both her arms and legs removed. She wanted to be a human suitcase.
A human suitcase. Yeah. No arms or legs.
Yes, and he made even a suitcase for her, you know, and took her, and she loved it. And complete with photographs.
Did you ever meet this couple?
No, I never met them.
But they sent a lot of photographs.
Yes, yeah. And I got a lot of letters like that. On a certain moment, I had a whole map full of it. And then I realized, yeah, wait a moment, I promised everybody that I would publish everything. So then I started a new magazine.
Willem.
Yes?
You had a good publisher.
Yes.
Remember him?
Yeah, I remember.
Mickey.
Yeah, and Paul and Shirley.
Shirley, right.
You know, because they were the actual publishers. And the interesting thing was...
No, I was actually the publisher. I was the business manager.
Oh, the business manager.
I ran it all.
Yeah, but anyway, we thought on a certain moment we should publish this. Isn't it?
Yes.
And then on a certain moment I thought, okay, let's make a new magazine called God. And of course that was in America the worst thing you can ever do. Mm. I mean, everybody protested and I said, okay, we call it G. The magazine with a secret name.
And do you remember the night we went to Riverside Printing?
Yeah, when we went to the print shop and they printed the whole thing, the whole print shop stopped.
Right.
It became silent, and the first 500 issues disappeared at the print shop.
And George, by the way, who was a German, very tied in with military family, came over and he said, no, you can't publish this under the name of God.
No.
So we had to change. What was the artist's name that made the logo? The Chrome logo. Okay, anyway, very famous San Francisco artist.
Oh, you mean Robert Williams?
Yeah, Robert Williams.
Oh, yes, yes.
Made the logo.
Yeah.
And we had to go in and cut that logo.
Yeah.
And just take out the OD.
Yeah, and call it G.
And call it G. And then we put it back on the press, and it started to roll. And they were picking up the copies, and they were going, oh, my God.
God, yeah.
Oh, my God. Right.
Oh, my God.
The subject does come
up.
Yeah.
As you could barely believe it.
And
I think the whole magazine sold out in about 5 hours or so.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then after the third issue, what happened was...
The FBI.
No. The Manson family.
Oh, the Manson.
Oh,
right,
the
right.
Manson family.
The Manson family sent a cassette to all the media that the makers of this magazine, who was corrupting the morals of the American population, would be killed.
Wow.
And that was me. I was making a fucking magazine.
Charlie Manson after you.
Yeah, but you know, this thing is, I didn't mind. And I started getting telephone calls in the middle of the night, we are going to kill you.
Yeah, and me too, Willem.
Yeah, and you too. Yeah. And you said on a sermon, Willem, you should take this serious. And then we moved out of America to Holland.
Mm.
And kept making the magazine.
You moved to Holland to avoid the Manson family killing you.
Yes, yes. I mean, I would have never gone, but I mean, Mickey told me, listen, you should go.
Huh. And did they, I mean, aside from the phone calls, did they do anything? Did they ever come to your office?
No. Never. But I mean, yeah. I never could take this serious, but
everybody
said, Willem, you should take it serious.
Yeah, I would like to correct some of that history. We actually moved not because of the Mansons. The Mansons were really not a threat, and when the Beverly Hills Police Department, this was his paranoia, this was Paul's paranoia, the tape that we received at the show, at the newspaper, was actually from a guy who had a sex story, and they had the bomb squads and everybody was there. What happened when we published God, I think it was the third issue, the FBI came to the office and they said, if you publish one more, just one more issue, you're all going to prison forever. And that was the night, the day...
Oh, I never knew this.
Oh.
Did you ever tell me that?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my God. I never know. Yeah, the FBI?
A revelation.
The FBI, right.
Oh, wow.
12 agents.
That's totally new for me.
No, 12 agents, not from Nevada.
Wow.
Because we had sent it to Nevada.
Mm.
And at that time, Nevada was not owned by corporations.
Mm.
It was owned by the pornography mafia.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. And you could not publish these kinds of things. Yeah. And then, in a few days, what did we do? We got on a plane. I sold everything that I had. And we ended up in Amsterdam.
Uh-huh. And there you made the Annie Sprinkle?
No, that was later.
That's
that
later.
Was,
okay. That's
that
later.
Later.
That's later.
But we did make, with, I forget the doctor's name in England, who immediately surrendered an issue for England. We did two issues for Holland.
For Holland, yeah.
We were exchanging, and this was a very funny story, that some guy in America, right, liked to shit in his pants. Okay?
All right.
And then everybody in Holland was going, well, here in Holland, we don't shit in our pants.
No.
And then suddenly,
frowned upon.
We get a letter from a Dutchman.
Yes.
Who's shitting in his pants.
Who shit in his pants.
And then there was the guy that exchanged his shit pants for another guy's shit
Yeah,
pants.
They wanted to exchange, right?
Wow.
And everybody
the
was
whole
outraged.
Pants shitting thing, it is outrageous. All this pants shitting. I don't know. I don't even know if that's in the same category as sex.
I think that's a separate category all its own, actually.
That's called catology.
But there is coprophilia. But that goes beyond most coprophilia.
It does.
But he kept publishing for America, from Holland.
Right. From Holland and from Italy.
Yeah.
But you were probably the only ones publishing pants shitting stuff.
We were the only ones publishing mutilation.
Mutilation?
Child sex.
Yeah, whatever.
Dog sex.
Whatever came in.
Right, whatever came in.
We published.
The idea was that if you want to have a free society or a free internet, then you have to have the discussion go on.
Well, did people ever send you, like, real crimes, like dead people?
No, we never got dead people, and I must tell you this.
Yeah.
I've never seen a snuff movie.
Really?
No.
I actually have.
Have you?
You have.
They're a little on the disturbing side.
No, well, the snuff movie I saw was the one where they hung Saddam.
Yeah, that's the biggest
snuff
movie.
I mean,
that
I guess
I've
have seen
the
a few.
Most the most publicized.
The most publicized
snuff
movie.
Yeah.
Movie. Yeah. Anyway. We have somebody in waiting here.
Okay.
I'm not sure who this is named. Nessie, hello.
Hello, Nessie.
Hello, Nessie.
Nessie, hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Are you a real doctor?
Absolutely unreal. No, I'm a doctor of philosophy with a major in psychology. I'm a PhD and a brain surgeon. Well, I'm not an MD.
In her free time.
What's the question? Let me see if I can help you.
My question, is it normal for me to want to fuck boys in the ass?
It depends.
This sounds like a trap question.
I'm excited about it.
Don't get too excited. Hold on.
We're in a trap.
A little distance.
Learn how to use your microphones.
Yeah. Well, the other one
no,
is.
Hold on.
Calm down. Okay, Matt.
Okay, so
Matt, tell us about yourself.
Tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm from Canada. I just was asking just to see if that's normal.
No, I want to know about you, Matt.
What do you want to know?
Well, I want to know who you are. Tell me about yourself.
My name is Matt. I'm from Canada. I have a poem for you. If you want to hear it.
You have a poem. Uh-oh. Keep your finger on the button. My finger's on the button.
Go ahead.
Okay, let's hear the poem.
It's
like playing Risk.
One fish, two fish, red fish, nigger fish.
You're racist.
We had to find out what was exactly pathetic about him.
You sounded
and then
like
dump
a racist.
Him. No, we're
you
dumping
are
him.
A racist.
He's back. Oh, I gotta ban him. Yeah. I gotta ban
Racism
him.
Racism is unacceptable.
Okay, block this user. Okay, Matt, you are blocked by Dr. Susan Block.
That's
Matt,
what you get for being
blocked.
A racist.
Whoa. That's always a little bit of an adrenaline rush when somebody comes in there. It's like a heckler coming into your show.
You can always hear them.
Yeah, you can. You can hear them. They're hushed.
They're nervous,
but they're focused.
Right, and then
they want to throw this in at
you. Shit. Yeah. Bad shit.
Yeah, bad shit.
Stinks. All right.
Very bad shit, you know, and we're not even talking about any pants.
You're listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web. You're listening to Revolution and Evolution. You're listening to military technology that's in my hands right now.
In your fans?
In my fan
in
hands.
In your fans. Okay. Now, do you have someone on the line, or what's going on over there?
What do we got on the line?
Oh, I don't know. I thought you had...
Anybody on the line? No.
No. Okay. So, what I have in my hands... A Willem de Ridder CD DVD?
Can you tell us about
this? Tell us about this.
Yeah, that, when we did the Sound Finger, which was indeed a soundtrack with a magazine, and later I started to do a special issue in Holland called God. There we could call it God without any problems. And it was for the first time that for an LP it was with in that time. And you had to put on your headphones and you hear when to open the first page. And you hear a story and you start looking at the first page longer than you normally would do. And in front of your eyes you see the whole picture change. And so, yeah, the whole soundtrack moved you through the entire magazine. And the whole magazine became alive in a way that you normally don't have.
I see. So while I look at this magazine, which has all kinds of very interesting pictures,
right. You hear
I'm
a
supposed
voice.
To listen to this.
Right, exactly.
A CD, right. Okay.
No, it's not a CD. It's a DVD.
DVD, excuse me.
And you see me sitting there on,
oh,
a,
I see
on
you.
A couch. Yeah, you
oh,
see
okay.
me sitting there. And I have the magazine too, you know. And I say, okay, I give you a little introduction. And then we both go through the little booklets, and every little picture will come alive, you know. And I've made many of these magazines now, and they became very well known, and people love them, sound magazines. And this one is made in Holland for the organization of the graphical industry, you know. It's once a year you have a special magazine. This was part of it, and I brought it especially for you as a little present.
Thank you. I can't wait to listen to it.
Yeah.
Or watch
and,
it.
And watch it, too.
Watch
you,
it, too.
You know. Yeah,
right. Right. Okay, we have Klaus or Chaus from Germany.
Klaus.
Klaus.
Hello, Klaus.
Hello, Klaus.
Klaus, hello. Hello, Klaus.
Klaus. Okay, Klaus.
Klaus.
Klaus, are you here with us?
Hit, please. Pick him up. Pick him up.
Oh, he's on here. Okay.
Oh.
From Germany?
Klaus.
Hold on.
Yeah, hello.
Hey,
hello.
Hey, Klaus.
Hello, Klaus.
I seem to have a problem that over the telephone, I have a time discrepancy about 2 minutes. So, I hear you in Skype, too, and that Klaus Kurt Christian.
Oh, I see.
But it would be nice if you could put up me there.
I'm going to put you up there.
Yeah, we're
okay.
going to put you up
here
in
we
Skype.
Go. We got you up in Skype now. Klaus Kurt Christian, I see you.
Okay, I'm going to hang up
Whoa.
On the telephone.
Okay. You sound a little bit like you're in a tin can right now, darling. Okay.
Okay.
A little better.
We had a talk half a year ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, 1 year ago, and now 1 year is gone, and I'm really thankful for the instructions you gave me.
Oh, my pleasure. How did I instruct you? Refresh my memory.
it's no problem. I'm positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had was a little bit depressive because, yeah, it's just on no way. Going on with life.
Okay, now it's coming back to me.
And I saw myself being alone for for all the time, changed my life. I don't have to feel anymore.
You don't what?
You're not depressed anymore.
Anymore.
Good for you.
Yes, not. I'm thankful to you, or not only without your help.
Wow.
But I have another problem.
Okay. But I'm amazed, and I can't imagine it was just my help. You really did a marvelous thing, bringing yourself out of that depression hole. Good for you.
Tough to do.
Yeah. I went out, finding a boyfriend. I have one now. For
right.
Oh,
I remember
right.
now.
Yeah.
Good for you.
He's negative.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Many times. Yeah, sure, it is good that it isn't positive.
Mm-hmm.
But it causes problems many times. So sometimes he gives me the feeling, or I have the feeling, that it's really hard because I want to be with him. I just don't even want to live without him.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm so afraid of hurting him and destroying his life by possessing him. And often causes troubles in our relationship. And
well, I
can
imagine.
Just wanted to ask you if you have any clue or any tips.
So the two of you are lovers without making love, is that it?
We are making love.
You are making love, and so you...
I can count it in 5 months on one hand.
Ooh. So are you HIV positive?
Yes.
Okay, so what kind of protection are you using with your lover?
Condoms.
And so are you saying that what causes the problem between you?
That he is afraid of being infected just by an accident.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid of infecting him just by an accident.
Yeah.
Well,
tough.
That's kind of true. It's a real possibility. But of course, there's always a real possibility in life that we will hurt each other. That exists in life anyway. It's just that yours is very focused on a particular nasty disease that you're at risk. He's at risk by being with you. So,
and
you have to make your peace with that somehow. You have to find a balance. There's no easy answer to that. It's really every day you have to think about how to make love with him in different ways that maybe aren't so risky. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do regular sex with condoms, of course, but maybe you can be a little creative. You know, like our friend that called in earlier, and he was saying, do you have any suggestions for people who are disabled about how to have sex? Because so many women don't want to have sex with him because he's in a wheelchair. And we basically said to him, yeah, you do. You have a drawback here. There's no doubt. Women stereotype guys in wheelchairs as being weak. But then again, you can overthrow the stereotype by the sheer force of your personality, by your strength in other areas, by being a great artist or a musician or whatever, turns her on and makes her forget about the wheelchair. So in some sense, you want to create some form of lovemaking that you can do with your lover that overthrows those fears. And I would say that should probably be something that isn't very risky. Whether it's phone sex or a mutual masturbation of some sort. You know what I'm saying?
And
I understand you.
Yeah, and the most important thing, most of HIV is transmitted by anal sex.
Hmm. Well, that's true.
Yeah.
So,
so most of the HIV virus lives in the shithole.
Okay. Speaking of shitholes,
yeah.
That's being a theme.
No, no, it's true. So most of my friends that died from HIV, most of them practiced anal sex.
So that is a risky behavior, even if you're using a condom. Certainly it's extremely risky if somebody has HIV and you're not using a condom. But even with a condom, because anal sex can sometimes break a condom. So, I mean, hey, on the one hand, I want you to relax and not be so fearful, but there is something to be kind of afraid of here. And so it's not like you can just take a brain vacation. But when you do things that are very safe, like mutual masturbation, you can take a brain vacation. That's when you take one.
Right.
It's like if the two of you were going to go out on a motorboat in the middle of the night, you wouldn't get drunk and go out and drive your motorboat around. You just wouldn't do that because it's too dangerous. So when you two have intercourse, it's like driving that motorboat in the middle of the night, and you have to have your wits about you, and you have to be as careful as possible. But yet, there's ways to make love that aren't driving a motorboat in the middle of the night.
Maybe you use two condoms.
Maybe.
Yeah. A lot of people do that.
Sure.
Yeah, but life is dangerous. It's full.
But life is dangerous, so, you know, you got to still enjoy it.
Yeah.
Or else it's going to be gone before you know it.
Wouldn't it be better just to... I'm really afraid of let's call it hurting him.
Well, let me ask you very specifically. What is there one giver and one receiver, or do you switch? And is this mostly anal we're talking about that you're afraid of?
Talking about anal at the moment, he's the giver, because I think when the condom once breaks and I'm passive, it isn't that, you know what I mean?
You're right. It's the receiver that is much more susceptible. The receiver
yes,
is, it's true.
But it's with everything. It's with giving a blowjob or,
Well, giving a blowjob is not as dangerous as anal sex, but it is a little risky. But how about mutual masturbation? There's hardly any risk there. I mean, unless you accidentally shoot it into his eye. And you can wear a blindfold. You know, wear sunglasses.
Should I be laughing? It's funny to me,
yeah,
but
well,
I don't know.
Life's a comedy, you know.
Life is a comedy.
So how about mutual masturbation? Why don't you cultivate that as a just this grand thing the two of you do together into all excess?
Never thought about.
You know?
There are plenty
something
of ways
to think
for
about.
You to please each
and
other.
And there's plenty of things you can do with your hands. The hands are amazing. And
mm-hmm.
if you keep your hands clean with no scratches or anything, you don't, you know, you can just use them. Use them. Use them on his genitals. Use them on his butthole.
Listen,
just play with him.
Let me tell you this. Shit is a fertilizer. Okay?
You're back in the shithole, aren't you?
Well, because this is very important.
Shit is a fertilizer.
The problem is that the sphincter has very delicate membranes,
right.
And they tear easily.
And they tear.
Yeah.
And then...
And then the virus can travel into
right.
the bloodstream.
Most of my friends that died from HIV, and I lost a lot of friends, it was about anal sex.
Yeah. I mean, we hardly ever... I don't know if I've ever heard of someone getting HIV from oral sex.
I've never heard of it.
You know, it could happen. It could happen. So we shouldn't be too cavalier about it. But it's rare to the point that I've never heard of it.
You're right.
Yeah.
And also one thing is that we want to blame HIV on sexual actions, but... There's a lot of other reasons for it, like
exchange of needles.
Yeah, this exchange of needles
mm-hmm.
and all kinds of things.
Blood transfusions.
As there is in diabetes. Okay.
Well, you can't get diabetes from someone else.
No.
It's not contagious.
No, you can't get it from someone else, but you can get it from what you eat. And that's a sex act.
Yeah.
That's sticking something in your mouth.
I don't know about that. You're really stretching definitions.
I'm not
now.
Stretching definitions.
No, diabetes is a different kind of disease.
No, if you eat the wrong things, you will get sick and you will die and you will have diabetes.
Well,
and
okay, you can. There's many, many ways to die. Is
right.
that what you're saying?
That's what I'm
there's
saying.
There's many ways
right.
to die, and
so
we all have to die sometimes.
Let's not all blame it on HIV and sex acts.
But this is a gentleman who has HIV, and he's very
right.
compassionate and caring
and
about his lover.
He's trying to be very
and he
careful.
Doesn't want to hurt his
right.
lover.
Right.
And he shouldn't.
Right. And you shouldn't. And you shouldn't drive drunk, and you shouldn't do anything that kills anyone else.
Never.
So.
That's all. That's the moral of the story.
And yet, sometimes people that aren't drunk and that are driving very well have a car accident.
Right.
So
driving and dreaming.
That's the
it can
world
happen.
For you.
It can happen. That is the vicissitudes of life.
Just be careful.
Okay.
So, I want you to try... That's my assignment for you, though. I want you to try a lot of mutual masturbation. I want you to try playing with that. Hand jobs. You know, I mean... Sometimes I think guys like hand jobs better than anything. Guys love hand jobs, don't they?
Oh,
you
yeah.
know,
guys love hand jobs.
Susie, they really do.
They do. It's so basic.
They really, really do.
They give themselves hand jobs. hand jobs, and if somebody else gives him a hand job, it's like, wow.
You know
that's what I usually do to my own cock.
It was the beautiful man that was here.
Oh yeah,
it was.
Hand job.
Hand job. Well,
too drunk for the radio, you guys.
Okay.
All right.
Take care and get back to me, Klaus Kirk Christian.
Good luck.
All right. Take care.
And you're listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web. We've got 15 minutes. We've got Willem de Ridder.
Where did Willem go?
He's right here.
He's right back here.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Willem. Okay.
We want to tell more of the story.
Yeah,
of,
I'm just going to put this one guy. Let me see Arnold here. Hi, Arnold.
Hi, Arnold.
Hi.
What's up?
No, it's not working. Okay.
Are you working here? No, you're not working very good. Okay.
Okay.
Can hear you, darling.
Okay.
You got to fix your machinery there, okay? I'm going to put you down in listening. Maybe you can fix it and put yourself back into waiting. Klaus Kurt Christian says he has one more question.
Okay.
Okay, let's put him back. Okay, hello. What's your other question?
Just one last might it be possible to talk to you also outside that radio show? So
yes, of course.
Earlier or later?
Absolutely. There is a charge for that, though. It's free to talk to me on the radio.
Time for Germany.
We're here 24 hours a day, but this is what we do. This is our free stuff. If you need to talk to the doctor,
you can talk to me privately
off
the
air.
You got to
download.
And then there is a charge for that. That's all. For the privacy.
Okay. Good.
Okay? So.
And listen, you're in Germany. You got the euro. So it's really cheap.
It's really cheap. That's true. The dollar is like the peso now. You guys.
Yeah, I know.
Step up to the plate.
All right.
Okay.
So you
take
can
care.
Call anytime.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye. That's right. And that goes for all of you, or you in particular, you who are listening and thinking, I would like to talk to the doctor, but I don't want to do it in front of all these people, all these guys horning in and talking and stuff, and you know, I want to have a private conversation where no one else is listening,
right.
And I'm just talking to her about my problems, my pleasures, my stuff. You can do that. You can call us right here at the Dr. Susan Block Institute.
So
and
anytime day or night
you can talk to me, you can talk to various people. Well, yeah, you could also talk to Brother Dave, and you can talk to various lovely ladies and gentlemen, and some in between, the lady gentleman type of people, female. Right. So the number is 213-749-1330 anywhere in the world. And we're going to be winding up the show. Yeah. Our special guest tonight is Willem de Ridder.
But I'd like to talk to Willem for.
Go ahead.
You know?
Go ahead. I'm going to just let you go.
Nice to see you, Willem.
Yeah.
So, Willem and I did a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about it this weekend in a gallery about some of the stuff we did together and other stuff that I developed here and later. So, it's quite a story. And
it's probably one of the most revolutionary stories in print media. It was real access to media. We have to understand that Willem and myself and Paul Eberly and Shirley were prosecuted 20 some odd times in a very, very short span of time.
Yeah.
For publishing.
Cowboys.
For publishing.
I remember when I in Holland started for the first time this magazine in which everybody could write, the official media were totally shocked, and none of the distributors wanted to distribute it. So in the beginning it was sold by young people on the street, and it sold so well that on a certain moment they had to,
right,
you know. But normally they would never do, because they were terrified of the fact that we had a young girl who was hit by her father. She made pictures of him and she sent it to us, and we put it on the front page.
Pictures of him hitting her?
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh.
Can you imagine? So this man was absolutely shocked.
I would imagine.
And all the other parents, too, was like, what? My own daughter can... You know?
Wow.
It's like giving the power back to the young kids.
So what do you think now when you see all over the internet, of course, everybody is printing their own stuff. Everyone posts. It's not, you don't have to publish, you just post.
I feel proud.
You blog.
Yeah, the next step, of course, and I'm working on that right now, is, and that you're working on that right now too, is the biggest fear in the West. You know what it is?
The biggest fear.
Yeah, the biggest fear in the West.
I mean, aside from just, like, death. What?
Oh, no, no. Even it's not death, and it's not terrorism.
Hmm.
You know what the biggest fear is? Speaking out in the open.
Yes.
Speaking out in the open is the biggest fear in the West? The
biggest fear in the West.
Of
we are terrified that we will be destroyed.
I must be very closeted
well,
here.
No,
I don't succumb to the
I want to tell an interesting story, which as a European I can tell. And that is, we go to the airport, and we're going through security, and there's an old woman who's being searched by agents of the United States government, and there's a young girl right next to us as we're boarding the plane who's crying.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is seeing this old woman being searched, and I turned around to the girl. She said, "That's my grandmother." And everybody in line shifted their eyes, because the greatest fear today is to talk about these things.
Hmm.
Yeah, but also on the media, we are terrified that if we are speaking out in the open, you know, we will be destroyed or dropped or jailed or...
Or fired.
And well, fired is a big thing. A lot of people who
speak
out...
Yeah, but normally, too, you know, on the street, too, and in normal life, too, we are terrified that we're not taken seriously or that people think we are stupid or that we don't belong, you know. So we learn that other people can think about us, which is the biggest lie ever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we are terrified of what people think of us. So we do everything... To be normal, to be,
fuck what people think.
Yeah, you know,
except here at the speakeasy, we do everything to be not so normal.
And
we do. That's the way you're supposed to do it.
Exactly, you know. So
well, we just kind of do what we do, and we kind of fall into the abnormal sometimes.
Well,
and the normal
one of the things
sometimes.
That I've always loved about Willem is fuck privacy.
Mm-hmm. There is no privacy here.
Privacy,
everybody knows what I did tonight.
Privacy is a new concept in essence.
Yeah.
It's a Victorian concept.
But
the Victorians were the ones that put
day,
the kids into separate rooms.
Right. It's a modern day kind of privacy where you can hide.
Yeah.
And as Willem always said to me, but you make a little incision into the veneer.
You know, I did an experiment in Holland. I was one of the people who started their talk radio in Holland. And the interesting thing was I was pretty much at the birth of talk radio here in America too. I lived with the guy who started doing that. And I did a program where everybody could phone in and they got 1 minute time on the radio and they could do what they wanted. Total freedom of expression.
Okay.
You guess what everybody did.
What everybody did when
what
they could
you
say whatever they wanted on the radio.
Exactly.
They, I don't know, sing a song?
They started cursing.
Right.
They were cursing.
Everybody started cursing at everybody. Because they're terrified that if they don't go in the attack, they will be attacked themselves.
Huh.
And not one program, week after week after week, they kept cursing.
Well, do you think that they just craved that freedom because they, at that time, it was like, I mean, now you can do an internet show and curse all you want and it's not a big deal, but in those days you couldn't curse on the radio.
No,
so,
because it was new,
you know?
Yeah, but then it became very clear how afraid we are. Because on television too, most programs like Idols and you name it, is to destroy people who are not good enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there's a strong
Big Brother,
sadistic.
You know, the Golden Cage.
A lot of the reality shows are very sadistic.
Very sadistic, you know?
Yeah.
So you're destroyed, and then you're for the rest of your life, you're an idiot. You know, thrown out.
You might be an idiot, but then you could be a star. You know, you never know.
Yeah, you never know. But mm-hmm. I know many people in big positions, you know, I would say high position, directors of big companies, and they still feel that, and they cannot talk about it because we're on the high place now, that they're stupid. Hmm. That they don't deserve this, you know, and they don't dare to say it anymore. And it's ridiculous, you know, how we are made so afraid for each other. And in internet they call it flaming, in all the chats, you know what I mean? It's how people destroy each other. So I'm starting a radio station now, where everybody can start their own program.
Oh.
And people can listen to it and chat back. So there's direct contact. And slowly...
Your own Skype.
Yeah, it's directly, you know. And it's already for 10 years. And now people start being nice to each other. You know, when you enter the chat, they're like, hi, wow, you know. And so it's amazing how very slowly it's changing. How we find our courage back to be normal, to be open, to not be afraid of each other. You know what I mean?
You know, I have
that's
someone.
That's the beginning of all sex, too. You know?
Yeah. Although a little bit of fear is kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's okay.
You know.
But if
too much.
If it forms your whole life, you know. It's
a little bit of fear is like spice in your enchilada, but too much spoils the meat.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a guy in waiting who I like his name because it's so much like another name, Christopher Kitchens. I want to see what he has to say. Reminds me of Christopher Hitchens. Hello.
That's ironically funny you say that. I actually watched the movie and I was totally blown away by the fact that I kind of mirror him growing up in a way, and the older I got. So yeah, that's funny.
Christopher Hitchens?
Yeah, actually, you remember Hitch, the movie Will Smith? He was the actual day doctor?
No, I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about Christopher Hitchens, the journalist. You're not talking about him.
No,
that's okay. He's a journalist and he just wrote a book. I think he wrote a book called The God Delusion. He's like a professional atheist. But that's not you. You're Christopher Kitchens.
Jesus, that's kind of ironic. It's not atheist that I am. I'm Wiccan.
You're Wiccan.
You're
like
Wiccan.
Me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Goddess worshiper.
Like me.
Yeah, well, my family's having to slowly swallow that one even after 15 years of getting over it. They're trying to slowly turn me back to the way of Baptist and not
a
denomination.
A Baptist.
Oh, you're a lapsed Baptist.
Yes, I grew up... Well, here's the thing is, and I don't know how this started, and this is actually a good conversation because it actually takes a weight off my chest.
Go ahead.
My family is Scottish, and my dad's side of the family is Cherokee.
Oh.
And so I got both sides of family, and my actual email name is Shaman Celtic, so my family's gotten used to that at the same respect. But through it all, it was the whole idea that I was growing up, and I felt downtrodden by
yeah.
the church because I just couldn't let people be who they felt comfortable with
right.
yeah.
worshiping. I was 12 years old when I started writing Sanskrit and reading and speaking other languages
Ooh.
That they didn't even understand how it came about, and neither did anybody in the church. And so I kind of went my own way, and actually started out in 2000 when I joined the military. I found someone who was attuned to me, and it went from there, and I started studying the latter levels of witchcraft and everything that related to it, and I found myself in a very comforting situation where I knew my soul was in the right spot.
Hmm.
And
well, we were just talking about fear. Fear. Do you think you got into witchcraft to kind of deal with your fears?
No, actually, here's the ironic part. When I was a year old, I drowned to death, and they brought me back.
Mm. Oh, you had a near-death experience.
On,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I lost...
Oh, I just said you had an NDE, near-death experience?
Well, I wouldn't call it that, but growing up, I had dreams of things crashing, And I never could explain it, and I kept telling my mother, and she just listened to it, because I'm her only child. And it was ironic, I was at Fort Boyd last year, and she called me one day, and she goes, "Baby, you won't believe this." And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "It happened." I'm like, "What happened?" She goes, "An aircraft crashed near our golf course, a military experimental aircraft. It crashed."
No, oh, so you think you had a premonition about that?
Well, not only that, I've got a best friend of 27 years who I go right across the street from. I was in Korea, and the day before the accident happened, I told him exactly where it was going to happen. I told him to stop his brakes 30 seconds before the time it was supposed to happen, and it saved his life.
Wow.
It saved my grandmother's life.
Well, you should go into, you know, this is a profession. Become
no,
a psychic advisor.
No, I don't do that because I live in a bad area where it's all heavy Baptist.
Oh,
bad area.
Bad area with heavy Baptist.
I thought you lived in a gang area or
no,
something.
That's kind of funny.
That's very funny.
What area is this?
I live in Texas. I live
in
a small town called Mansfield.
Okay.
But a city, it is now.
I see.
I live near Fort Worth.
Yeah.
But
okay.
I do believe heavily in my abilities to foresee things that are happening. I do believe heavily in a lot of other things. It's just now that I've got out the military, I can fully access.
Did you fight anywhere? Did you fight anywhere?
I'm sorry?
Were you sent to Iraq or Afghanistan?
Yes, I spent 10 months in Iraq near Baghdad.
Mm.
How was it?
What's the solution?
The solution is let them people fight it out because it's never going to end no matter what we do. It is a religious war that will never ever win. That's all it is. It is a religious war that has been going on for thousands of years that no matter what we do and how much money we lose, and I hate to say this, God bless my brothers, no matter how many souls we lose, it will never be won by us being there.
Mm-hmm. And by the way,
we hear you, brother.
We support our troops. We want to bring them home.
Absolutely.
I have been to the actual Baghdad hospital. I was medevaced there before I left Iraq. Mm. I have seen everything from children walking in with gunshot wounds, blown off arms, to the actual Iraqi man who's about 7 years old taking his last breath off a respirator, looking me straight in the eyes and holding out his hand just for something to hold on to.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
You've been through a lot.
I've been through a small part of it.
Yeah.
That's just a teeny part of it.
Yeah.
I could go on forever, and I won't because I don't want to waste.
No, you're not wasting time. It's very important that talk about these things. It's very important that we talk about this horrible war.
Well, because so many people now are just seeing it as a war on their TV.
Right.
They don't see it as real. And when you tell stories like that, you bring home the reality to people and remind people that we really shouldn't be in there.
I got pictures of that all over Iraq, everything.
Mm.
And not only that, I've seen what has happened to soldiers who were in positions that I wasn't. I was a Black Hawk mechanic for 8 years.
Black Hawk.
I have met. Yes, I was a helicopter mechanic. I missed my job, but, you know.
It's exciting.
You know, you're not addicted to the adrenaline, are you?
Let me tell you.
No, I'm a laid back.
Okay, good.
Go ahead.
You're back into being a peaceful guy.
Let me tell you this. The most important thing that you brought back to us as citizens is what you just said about this war. It's a horrible war.
That's your truth, and that is
And that's your truth. And that's the truth that we all need to know as American invaders. In a country, as you said, let them work it out. And it's messy.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. Here's the one thing, and I would like to add some of this.
Sure.
There was an Iraqi. I was in the green zone, which is where GIs go to have a 3-day pass to just kind of, in a way, get away from it, even though they're there. And it's an illusion that they put around you, where you got a swimming pool, great food,
right.
You can sleep late, do whatever.
And you got a McDonald's, right? Do you have a McDonald's?
No. Hold on. Let me go,
go
a little
ahead.
Bit further into this. I actually talked to an Iraqi woman who spoke pretty good English.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to think of, in my mind, before I even met anybody, never thought I would actually talk to an actual Iraqi who spoke English. And the first words that came out of my mouth, what do you think will happen when you leave?
Mm-hmm.
And I waited, and she looked at me with this look in her eyes of, I don't even know what to call it. It was, I don't have words for it.
Yeah.
But she said straight up, she goes, when you leave, we will die.
Hmm.
Yep.
The sectarian violence between the two warring nations, the Shias and the Shiites, will never end. This is a biblical fight that will never end. And it won't be because we didn't try. It will be because we weren't supposed to be there in
the first place.
No, it was held together by a strong man who a lot of people hated, and he was a pretty mean guy. But it was...
He was a second Hitler.
Yeah. Mm. He was the second Hitler. He also said something to George Bush that not many people remember. You tried to run this country. Yeah.
Yeah, and now, of course,
we have more prisoners.
Not easy to run.
We have almost as many deaths. We have a generation of our children that's gone off to fight a religious war.
Okay. Let me ask you this. How about that church from Oklahoma, whoever the hell they are, that want to go and say that all our service members are fags, that they work for a... That church, you know what I'm talking about, that church.
I've heard about that.
Yeah.
those hormones...
They're nuts.
They just make me sick because I get so mad. I see them on a TV and I want to punch the TV because I can't punch their face myself.
Right, and because you've been to war.
Yeah.
I have a personal friend that I knew when I worked... I was with the 1st Air Cav Brigade, 1st Cav Division... You know, I was part of the first team,
mm-hmm.
You know, and a good personal friend of mine, 2 weeks after I left, I got medevaced out because the stress made me so sick I couldn't work.
Mm.
And I found out through a friend of mine when I got back here to the States that she'd been hit by a mortar, and she survived, and it blew my rocks off. I was totally, I stopped dead in my tracks. And when he told me who it was, I was absolutely, like, I didn't know. I just couldn't think.
Yeah.
Well, 5 months later, I ran into her at a place they have on Fort Hood. It's called an R&R Center. It's recuperation and resilience program to get soldiers back into the fight if they can. Well, the girl I worked with, she was 15 feet away from the mortar when it hit. She was on 2 permanent profiles that the government were not supposed to deploy her for, and it took out one of her knees to the point where they had to reconstruct it.
Mm.
And here's the thing. The girl that was staying next to her died instantly.
Wow.
It took away half of her head.
Mm.
And I didn't find out about this until almost 3 months later. And when I found out, I cried because...
I'm sure you did.
Yeah. And you know something? You have a little gift there. You have a little gift, Chris. You have that sixth sense that got you out of there, that made you stressed to the point you got medevaced out and you escaped the mortar yourself. So, I don't know.
Can I give you just a little...
No. We got to go, darling. I'm sorry.
Call us back.
But listen, we're going to be back, not tomorrow night, but Saturday night. We are going to be back here, right here on Skype and on Radio Suzy 1 and on drsusanblock.com. And we want to talk to you again, so join us again on Saturday night when we're going to celebrate our 16th wedding anniversary as well. But we appreciate what you're going through, and I just want to leave you with this, Chris, that you have a gift for kind of predicting the future. You know, you seem to be able to predict bad things happening and get out of the way or help other people to get out of the way. So use that as a Wiccan priest, okay, darling?
You also have another gift. Tell the truth in what you saw.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So take care. Bye-bye.
Willem?
Okay.
We're closing down.
We're going to close down the show. So I want to thank you all. I want to
thank everybody. We're closing
everybody.
Down.
I want to thank my special guest, Willem de Ridder, storyteller par excellence and multimedia man. Thank you, Willem.
Thank you very much, my beauty.
For joining us on one of your favorite media, the radio.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
We love you. We love your voice.
And your voice, too. You're doing great.
I love my voice.
And we love your voice as well. Yeah. And we love Terry's voice when it's properly modulated.
Right. Not quite so drunk.
Yeah, not so close to the microphone.
Not so close. Look, you can be close, but if you are close, then you have to kind of talk in a hushed way.
I'm too drunk to talk like that.
You have to keep your voice away from it, right?
Right.
You can get right on top of it, but then you have to be very soft.
You have to modulate.
Anyway, we will continue with our vocalizing. Saturday night. I think we're going to take off tomorrow night, right?
Yeah,
we're going to take a little rest.
Way too much work.
God. All right, so in the meantime, check out Willem de Ridder at willemderidder.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Check it out.
It's an English department too, yes.
Yes. And check us out at drsusanblock.com and join bonoboway.com. That's bonoboway.com. And until we meet again, on the air somewhere, I want you to be good. Good, good, good. Even if you're bad, feel good.
Yeah.
And
always feel good.
I want you to be happy. Not all the time. You know, if you're happy
please.
All the time, that's really kind of boring.
Boring, yeah.
And you should be unhappy sometimes. You should have a little of the other side of the polarization, the bipolar thing. You should get depressed a little. Not too depressed. You know, just life is kind of sad. I mean, the Buddha said life is suffering. So we have to be aware of that every once in a while. Those people that tell you they're going to make you happy all the time, I don't know. I think that's a little bit like Prozac, you know. So happiness is something, though, to have is more than the other thing. You know, you want to have a greater deal of happiness and to find the happiness and the pleasure in life.
It starts all with acceptance.
Right.
If you accept whatever happens in your life as something that you created it, then you give yourself the power back.
Right, and then you won't suffer very long.
Exactly.
You'll only suffer for a minute or two,
exactly.
Or maybe five.
Exactly.
Right, and then you'll go, okay, I'm suffering, and I must
Now you tell yourself,
need to do
you,
this
no,
right
you
now.
Tell yourself, look what I create now.
Yeah, well.
And then you can create something else.
Then you could, if
yeah.
you want. You can create what you want.
Exactly.
So, be creative, and make love, not war. Make like bonobos, not baboons. Make love to someone you love tonight, even if that someone is you. I love you.
Yeah, me too.
From Los Angeles, California, you've been listening to Radio Susie One on the World Wide Web, one of the first radio stations on the Internet. And from our house to your house, thank you for sharing your shitty underwear. And sharing your stories in your life. And we'll be back Saturday night on our Sweet 16. My name is David. I'm the chief engineer and the censor. And from our house to your house, thank you for having us. Love, peace.